Well, the big news this morning, of course, the stock market, and I guess say Quint took it on the chin yesterday, and we thought this morning there is no topic to talk about today except the stock market, and Quint Tatro is our guy, our go-to man when it comes to subjects like this, and so I got in touch with him early this morning, and he was gracious enough to come in. Good morning to you, Quint.
Oh, good morning, Jack.
Joule Financial is the name of your company, J-O-U-L-E. We're not going to talk about retirement. We're not going to talk about any of that. We're just going to talk about the stock market. And a lot of times people tune in at 9 that weren't here in the 8 o'clock hour. Would you mind repeating what you said then?
Sure. First of all, it's nice to be relevant again. You know, an advisor who takes a proactive approach to the markets and money management. We really have been in the back seat as everyone has flocked to this passive investing. You know, just buy the S&P 500 and forget about it. And there's some inherent risks there that are outside of the norm, and we'll talk about those as the hour evolves. Mm-hmm. But I think, first and foremost, I don't want to make light of the decline. I hate when people do that, because even though we have been in a cautious position, we still lost money yesterday. I lost money. Clients lost money. And so, you know, it stinks. I mean, and anybody who, again, takes this, oh, you should have seen this coming. You know, I hate that. It just kills me. But so I'm not going to make light of it. With that being said, I think we all need to take a breath, a deep breath, because I vividly remember doing a 6 a.m. call-in, because we've been doing this now for over a year on your show, during the week in the summer of last year, and the big topic was, will the Dow cross 20,000? Oh, my goodness. Will we cross 20,000? And it was humorous because I think, you know, not too long before that, the question was, will the Dow cross 15,000? You know,
right.
And so the answer was yes. We thought the Dow would cross, you know, 20,000. It did. It promptly, from mid 2017 through the beginning of 2018, ran from 20,000 to 26,000. An unbelievable sprint of 30% that is like you know, running up Mount Everest. I mean, it's this very, very sharp incline, and that is what we're seeing the opposite effects of. And what that's called is momentum. Now, I'm going to drill down and tell you why that happened. Okay, so first of all, you have this, you know, people candidly or you know, coyly created an acronym FOMO, fear of missing out. And you have had people that have been basically kicking and screaming about this run-up in the market for the last almost 10 years. So even if you recall, Jack, I'll never forget this. I was at our firm basically made a name for itself avoiding 2008. We did a very good job of avoiding the significant decline. But, and you'll remember this, I took a lot of flack because I was late getting back in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did not run in at the bottom of 09. I waited for I wanted to see a few things. I wanted evidence. I wanted proof. And that proof came in the form of balance sheets of financial institutions. I needed to see them improve, regardless of how they improved. This is what drove people nuts. They improved on the back of taxpayers with quantitative easing, but they improved nonetheless. And so in mid-2010, after basically being pessimistic of the rally, I switched tracks. I abruptly changed my view and said, okay, we're long. That drove people nuts. You were bearish, you were negative, now you're buying it at the top, et cetera. Well, okay, that was 7 years ago, all right? We've had a pretty good run from that point. And there have been people, I've talked about this on this show and others, that this has been the most hated stock market that we've seen in my, people have hated it the entire way. It's fake, it's phony, et cetera, et cetera. But it kept going. And so finally, it's almost as if at the end of 2017, or maybe even the correlation of Trump being elected, I don't know, but it gave people an excuse to say, okay, I'm in. You know, forget it, I'm in. I'm in, and, you know, Katie bar the door, here we go. And so that's what created that run-up. Now, their desired, this is very important to understand, their desired method of buying the market has been through index funds. Okay, it has been the number one in vogue investment class around. It's been trumpeted by the likes of Bogle at Vanguard, Warren Buffett, you name it. And the reason is performance. Everyone has said, why try to outperform the market? Just buy the market. Okay, this is where it gets a little in the weeds, but I want people to understand. The S&P is a market cap weighted index. And what that means is that as stocks grow in price, their market cap increases. So every new dollar into that asset class allocates more to a certain specific amount of stocks. That group of stocks over the last year and a half became incredibly narrow, okay? To the point, this is amazing, where four stocks, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, and Google, those four companies controlled 10% of the S&P 500's daily movement.
Wow.
There's 500 stocks in the entire S&P 500.
Four of them are controlling 10%.
Yes. So do you understand the magnitude of that? It's massive. Okay. And so now when those stocks reverse, when they see selling, that is, and they're high beta stocks. Think of those names: Facebook, right. Apple, Microsoft, Google. This isn't Coca-Cola, AT&T, Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson. These are high volatile stocks. When they correct, when people want to sell those stocks, it has a dramatic impact on the index itself, and that is one of the reasons of the incredible volatility on the downside. Because when people want out, they sell that index, and then that index has to sell those big positions, and then they take a tumble. In addition, this is again critical, in addition, in the past, people would buy actively managed mutual funds. So they would pay a manager, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm an advocate of index passive investing as well. I think you have to have proper allocation and diversification, but I am an advocate of it. But nonetheless, in the past, they paid a manager, a mutual fund manager. And when the turbulent times came, that mutual fund manager would sell a certain group of stocks and buy another group of stocks. So that's why you would see staples like Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, Coca-Cola, those names like that. They would be up on a day like we saw yesterday, where your Apples, Googles, Facebooks would be down. And all they were doing was kind of hiding out. But now, when the average investor sells, they sell the S&P. And the S&P has to indiscriminately sell across the board. They can't pick and choose. They can't go, okay, sell some of this, buy some of this, let's sell some of this. They have to blanket sell to meet those redemptions. So on the way up, this passive index investing has been great. Everybody loves it. Oh, just buy the S&P, buy the Vanguard, forget it. On the way down, that momentum cuts both ways. And that's one of the things that we're seeing in this market right now.
Quintetro Jewel Financial with us. We've got some folks on hold. We've got some texts. We've got some emails. Let's start with the phones. John, thanks for calling. You're on with Quint.
Morning, gentlemen. I'm one of Quint's clients, and I think I've been at your suggestion, Jack, for a number of years, and I appreciate his steady hand on the tiller. I was out working in my building yesterday, and I have CNBC on the TV out there, and, of course, I have it on mute and listen to WVOK, so I watched the market drop faster than Bill Bailey's jaw after he mentioned pigskins, and I couldn't believe it was happening, but I'm hoping it'll whipsaw back up one of these days.
Well, John, it talked about in the beginning of the show, the volatility cuts both ways, and the acceleration that we've seen to the upside is exactly, I mean, you being a client, getting those emails that I've been sending out and saying, hey, this has been great, but this is exactly why we're, you know, raising cash and starting to get more into a defensive position. I mean, we obviously gave some gains back yesterday, but I think that having a plan and making sure that, you know, we know what our objective is, whether we continue to go lower or stabilize here and this is the bottom, again, having that plan of attack is critical. So Jack asked me the first thing I walked in this morning, and he said, you know, are folks calling? Are they, you know, are they nervous? Are, you know, this is the first audible dialogue I've had with anybody, because they're not. Because just as you expressed, you're, and I appreciate it. I didn't ask you to call in this morning. You did it on your own merit, and I really appreciate that. But exactly what you said, 20 years of experience, you have to have a steady hand here. You cannot freak out. You have to have a plan of attack, and you have to know, you know, okay, what are the steps? What are you going to do? And how are you going to handle this? And obviously, well, that's exactly what we're doing.
And I almost messaged or emailed Linda yesterday to ask if your fingers were sore from buying.
Well, we're not buying yet. We're not buying yet. If second mouse gets the cheese, I think we have to, you know, the patient is on the table. And yesterday was not a good sign. And a lot of people, you can actually get hurt. You know, just kind of holding your nose and saying, okay, you know, the worst is over. Let's go ahead and buy. I need to see evidence. I have to see legitimate evidence of, you know, stabilization and money returning to the market. And if I miss the little, you know, the first little bit of a turnaround, I am perfectly fine with that. So we'll see how it goes.
I'll highly recommend you, Quint. You've done well for me. I never worry about the money that I've got invested with you. You've done great. You just keep doing a good job.
Man, you have just made my day, John. Thanks so much.
It doesn't get any better now.
No, it doesn't.
Especially in a volatile
all
time.
Right, let's take a call. Somebody smacks me around here.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Here's one that says, Jack, the crooks on Wall Street took their profits, which returned the market to Obama era and low value. Isn't it time to buy?
Well, again, I would argue the valuation call. I think we have a long way to go before the market is cheap on a valuation level. So, again, just as I relate to the first caller, I'm not running out just because we had a big drop in buying. And that may prove a mistake. Brexit did just that. Brexit had a 48-hour, you know, 1,000-point correction in the Dow, something like that, and that was a great opportunity to buy. I did not do that either. I waited until I saw stabilization, and I like comfort. I like to know that, you know, it's kind of like I don't necessarily have to bet before the race starts. In this game, I can go to the window, you know, when the horses are at the quarter pole, and I can say, I like that horse,
yeah.
And the odds are much better. So I like to wait and make sure that you know, companies have stabilized first.
This is from, I don't know who this is from. It says, why do the markets contract every time the Fed, parentheses, Yellen, burps? That's Ed. It's from Ed.
Yeah, well, I think it has a lot to do with it, for sure. We are in a rising rate environment, and there's a lot of debt out there. And when you talk about the Fed increasing their federal, you know, rates, you're talking about small percentages, but big percentage increases. So, for example, you know, going from a target rate of 1.25 to 1.5 to 1.5, 1.75, it's only a 25 basis point difference. It's not a big deal, but 25 basis points. Understand the math. 25 basis points on 1% is a 25% increase. So if you have a company, if you are a major corporation, you know, utilizing debt and the debt markets to you know, grow your business, and those rates go up by 25%, your payments have gone up by 25%. That's a big deal. So the markets tend to overreact in that that situation, and the Fed, I think, tends to, they've learned, Janet's learned her lesson. She tends to, you know, kind of strike a verbal blow and then, you know, back off when she sees the reaction. I don't necessarily think that's what happened here. It was predicted the Fed would not raise in January. They're going to raise in March. Those are very predictable, you know, statistics, probability events that we can see. I think, again, my personal opinion, the market just got ahead of itself, became way too speculative and frothy. And then when that happened, it just became an all mass exodus for the door, which is scary. It can continue. I think that's what people have to understand. I want to share the following. Again, I don't make light of declines.
Right.
Because that happens. But I want to categorize a couple people. If you are in a contributory phase in your life, if you're listening to this, you're going to work today, and every 2 weeks you get money deducted from your 401k, you know, et cetera, et cetera, keep doing what you're doing. You know, you should have, and we've talked about it, you should have rebalanced at the end of the year or at the beginning of the year. Rebalancing is critical. But keep buying in. Keep following your plan. You have a long way to go to retirement. If you are at or near retirement and you are in the withdrawal phase of your life, make sure that your allocation is appropriate. make sure that you're not overexposed to stocks. And prior to the 9 a.m. hour, what I said is, yes, it comes down to math and what we call your required rate of return, but it also comes down to your sleeping. Your sleeping level. If you stayed up tossing and turning all night last night because the Dow dropped 1,000 points and it's ultimately now at 24,000, you have too much risk. Whether you're a client of mine, I've been telling clients, I want to make sure your allocation is appropriate. We've been going through doing the work when the market just goes up every day because that's the time to do the work. The time to do the work is not now. It's too late now. But I've been saying, look, I want to make sure the allocation is appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. But that, if you're even a client of mine or somebody else's and you're just tossing, you're just sick to your stomach, your exposure to stocks too high. It's as simple as that. Adjust your exposure. Adjust your risk down. Because, again, volatility like this, whether it happened in 2 days or it takes place in 20 days, it's a 5% to 10% correction from the top or in a couple days, depending on how you measure it. I wouldn't be surprised to see a 20% correction over time, for sure. That's a normal, retracement of a bull market that's been going on for nearly 10 years.
I saw one story this morning, and there's a billion stories online, as you know. Mm-hmm. Some legitimate, some not so much. But they referred to it as a stock market crash.
Yeah,
that's the wrong term.
Yeah, I agree. So sensationalism sells, and we do make light of this a little bit.
What is a stock market crash in your estimation?
So that's a good point. From these levels, I would say 20%. I mean, I would say an intraday move of 20% from these levels. That would be maybe 10%. I mean, I think a 10% to 20% decline intraday or during the day would be a crash. And is it possible? It's always possible. I mean, is it a high probability event? No, it's not. And going out and saying the people that put their careers on the line predicting such things is short-lived. But the clock's right, a broken clock's right twice a day. So, again, the allocation, having a plan, having an allocation, I love what Warren Buffett says. Warren Buffett says, the biggest detriment to investors is being able to read headlines. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but read headlines and to be able to get market quotes every day. The fact that we get these headlines that tell us, oh, the world is ending, stock markets are crashing, in addition to we get price points every minute, every second, is the worst thing for an investor to do. On the way in today, I bought a Starbucks. Okay, in fact, I bought a Starbucks for the car behind me. It was an officer. I felt that was a good thing to do.
Oh, nice.
But anyways, I don't know why I said that out loud. But anyways, nonetheless, I'm still going to buy a Starbucks. Okay, I didn't go. I mean, and I lost money yesterday, but I didn't come in today and go, I'm not going to buy a Starbucks. I don't drink Coca-Cola, but people who drink Coke are probably going to come out and drink Coca-Cola today. These are legitimate companies that are not going away. Can they experience significant price corrections? Yes. And at some point, they will be of value. And at some point, there will be an opportunity. Not here.
Okay, the market is open, and our phone lines are too. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty@wvlkam.com, and you can also send us a text at 253-5959. Here's one that says, how does Quint feel about General Electric? Before we get to the answer to that question, what's the word with the market? How do we open?
Well, the market opened down 550. We're down 300, 270. We're coming back pretty strong. This is the Wild West, these opens. I never have traded or done much during this. But again, this is a no-touch market for me for a while.
Leave it alone.
I'm not going to, you just watch. You let others battle it out, and then you pick sides once you know who's going to win. So I have no desire to do a thing here.
You know what Kenny Rogers said.
Yeah, you got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them for sure.
What about General Electric?
So I'm torn on this one because I have some folks that are clients that have held this position for probably 60 years more. Well, it's generational, so it's passed on. When I say I'm torn, I have some folks that hold it, which has been very, very challenging. We trimmed some recently that was tough to do. Again, this is going back multiple generations. Grandfather who had worked at GE for 40 some years, but they have problems. General Electric has problems, and more than likely will be split up. They'll be removed from the Dow, which will be a sad day because they were the only remaining Dow stock from from the original 12. In fact, the only one left. Again, the Dow 1893, I think, and 12 stocks, 11 of them are gone, and the only one that's from the beginning is GE. I'm not an advocate. If you do not own this position and you're thinking, I have had people have asked me, you know, oh, what, GE's at, you know, 15, 14, you know, should I be a buyer of it? No, I wouldn't. If I did not have any on the books, I would not be buying it here. If you have it on the books, I think you got to be very careful. Do I think we're going to wake up and GE's going to go out of business? I do not. They have legitimate assets, but I do believe they'll be broken up, and it'll take a very long time for that stock or its components to recover. But if you do not own it, I think that I would not be a buyer of GE here.
This is Mary. This is going to turn up sound like an infomercial for your business, because I know she's probably going to pat you on the back. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, and you're right. He was talking about people getting all nervous and not being able to sleep and sweating and so forth. I don't give it a second thought because I know he's in charge of my stuff and I don't have to worry about it.
Well, Mary, let's classify a few things, though, because it's not I love it. I love the endorsement, but I want to you have been an investor for a very long time. You have owned specifically because you worked there and you bought shares Verizon for how many years now? How long have you owned Verizon?
Probably since 1966.
Okay, so Mary has seen her fair share of markets. She collects the dividend. She is, in every sense of the definition, a true investor when it comes to individual equities. So she has seen the ups and downs. Verizon, you know, trading at 50, been as low as in the low 20s in the 08 and 09, been as high as in the 60s in 98, 99. So as much as I love that endorsement, Mary, I think people have to know that you have 50 plus years, almost 60 years of market experience, which not many people do.
I
think the accolade goes to you and not me. So thank you for that endorsement, but you're the champ for sure.
But you handle other stock for me too. It's not just
of
that.
Course, yeah. I mean, that's yes.
Now I'll
take the compliment. Yeah. And it's 20 years. I mean, it's a long time, and it's a lot of market experience and ups and downs. So yeah, I mean, thank you so much for that.
Thanks, Mary. We appreciate it. This is Jeff. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, Quinn and Jack. I have a question for you. My wife was with the company for like 24 years, and she was in a situation where her retirement account is like $82,000, and she has the opportunity when she turns 55 in February to either take a lump sum distribution. She's no longer there, so they're kind of forcing her hand, and she's been gone for 2 years, to either take a lump sum distribution or they will buy an annuity for her, and she can start receiving those payments. Just looking for some advice on what to do.
So you got to get out the old trusty calculator, meet with someone who can do that. And there's a lot of folks that can, but you have to run the math. You have to take basically the rollover amount that you're going to get, and so you know that amount because they'll tell you that. And then you have to do some math to figure out, okay, if we don't take that and we take the payments, what is the rate of return that they're paying us over, you know, this time period. So they'll probably give you options. They'll give you, you know, okay, you can take she can take it over the rest of her life, which would be the highest form of payment, because if she got hit by the proverbial bus next week, those payments would stop. Or she could take it with a 10-year period certain or over your joint life. And so it comes down to math, because ultimately what you can do is you can figure out, oh, okay, if I take that payment, they're basically paying me, you know, 2% or 3%. Sometimes I've seen it as low as 1% of an equivalent return. Sometimes I've seen it very high in the 4 to 5% return rate market. So it just depends. But once you figure out what that return is, equivalent return that they're paying you, then you can make an educated decision on whether it's better to take the lump sum and roll it out or take the payments. And again, I can't answer. I hate to bunt on the question. Happy to run the numbers for you if you want to sit down sometime.
Well,
I won't charge anything.
They gave us the charts on that, and it looks like the rest of her life, and then there's a spousal benefit with it too. She'd get like $580 a month.
Yeah, so again, you have to take your age. You have to take kind of equivalent life expectancy. So take your age, run it out to 88. or 89, depending on your, you know, health, and then take the total amount of money that if you took that on a monthly basis, total amount of money that's going to add up to, and then calculate what the lump sum would be versus that total amount of money that you're going to get, and that's going to give you an annualized rate of return. And again, once you calculate that, it's going to be a no-brainer, because if it's anything, in my opinion, this is one man's opinion, and I'm an advisor, and again, I don't know your specific situation, so all the disclaimers, but if it's very, very low single digits, you could probably roll it out and put it in a CD, and you'd do better over the next several years if you didn't want market exposure. If it's high, 4 to 5%, I guess that would be considered high, then it might be worth considering taking those annuity payments. But again, a lot of information there per situation. I've seen it go either way. Happy, you know, if you have a current advisor, meet with them. If you can run the numbers yourself, run the numbers yourself. I'm happy to just give you a second opinion. I can't, you know, I wouldn't be a manager of that money in this regard. So there's no, I have no incentive to help you in that. But I would do that for sure if you want to call the office.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what's it doing? Anything?
Oh, Jack, come on. Let's see. Pulling it up here. We're down 37 points now. We've come back 500 points. Okay, let's slip the tables. Dow is up 500 points from the open. Wow. Okay, I mean, come on. That's how ridiculous it sounds. I hate losing money. I do not like it. I mean, my wife, you know, we've been through this for 20 years and she looks at me she knows what's happening in the market. She watches it. I come in yesterday and she's like, how are you? You know, you okay? I'm fine. This is why I do what I do. I love what I do. I absolutely love it. And this is when most people are hiding under the desk. I love it. I'm here to help you through this. This is my job. I've been through markets. I've watched Bear Stearns go belly up. I've watched Lehman Brothers go belly up. I was 10 years old in the 87 stock market crash, and I remember how it impacted our family. My parents were at the exchange when it happened. They were visiting the New York Stock Exchange when it occurred, and it dramatically impacted our family going forward for the next year, year and a half or so. So I know this. Market's now positive. Up 5 points, that's a 555-point reversal. But, I mean, come on. This is the time where you get proactive with your planning. What's your required rate of return? Have an objective. Take a deep breath. There's good quality companies out there. Is it going to be volatile? Yes, we've gotten comfortable far too long, and we've gotten complacent. That's, I think, the big thing. We've gotten complacent, and it bit us. It bit us in the backside.
Quint Tatro, the president and founder of Jewel Financial, is with us in the studio right now. Give us a call. Send us a text. Send us an email, whatever you want to do. But this is a critical time. We don't want... See, now, this is a good analogy, I think, Quint. Bill Meck's got this 1, 2, 3, and 4 emergency rating.
Sure.
And this wintry mix that we have coming in tonight with freezing rain, sleet, and snow is a number one.
Okay.
It means that something could happen.
Yeah.
Then you got your two, and, you know, four, obviously, is there's a hurricane or a tornado or something running through here. So is this a 1, 2, 3, or 4?
So I like how you set that analogy up for me, but I'm going to counter it a little bit.
Okay.
It's always a 4 to me.
Really?
Yes.
No kidding.
Because you never know when it can turn into a 4. And so you plan for the 4.
See, that's why people are scared.
Again, I don't want you to go run out and have milk. I'll be the guy who knows what step 1, 2, 3, and 4 is and how to handle it. Don't take action like it's a number 4 yet, but be prepared for it. I write all the time to people, here's the best way to learn. I don't care if you're with an advisor that you love. I'm not trying to recruit you, but if you want to stay up on the markets or a second opinion, sign up for our email list. Go to retirementky.com, put in your email. We have thousands of people on that list. We don't sell those emails. But one of the things that I write a lot, I use this analogy. When I hear a shake in the bushes, I immediately think that it's a stealth ninja coming in to kill my family. And I take the action accordingly. Is it dramatic? Yeah, sometimes it is. Is it sometimes not needed? Yeah, it is sometimes not needed. But the minute that I and oh, by the way, many times, more often than not, the analogy continues, it's just the neighborhood cat that got into the bushes, made a little rustle, and went on. But if I get complacent and I hear a shake in the bushes and I think to myself, oh, that's nothing, I'm good, that's when I die. I don't ever want to do that, ever. So in our office, when we go through the last couple of weeks like we have, and again, I'm you know, we've had a good read on this market. We've gotten hit a little bit, but we've had a very, very good read on this market. That doesn't always happen, but it's been a good read. But nonetheless, if I don't look at this and go, okay, this could happen for sure. This market could crash. How do we get out of it? What's our plan? What's our risk, et cetera? I don't think I'm being prudent. And my job, I'm compensated by people to be prudent. So they all these accolades make me a little bit uncomfortable. I love them. I mean, it's wonderful that these compliments, but they're not comfortable because I've done a good job telling them, don't worry, it'll come back, et cetera. The reason they're comfortable is they know that I was up at 4 a.m. Watching overseas, understanding what's going on in the volatility markets. I don't want to go down in the rabbit hole, but there's some scary things that happened last night. They will not impact most of the retail investors, in fact, many at all. But there were some scary things, some things that blew up last night.
You mentioned it in the 8 o'clock hour, so talk about that, even though because it's interesting.
Okay, so
only
there's...
Because it's interesting.
Yeah, sure. So there is a... the volatility is a... You can buy volatility. It's insurance. And a lot of times people, if they own a position in a stock, I'm talking about big institutions, they can buy options, puts or calls to protect their stock in the event that it's going down. Let's say that somebody has a massive position in Johnson & Johnson. They do not want to sell it because they're going to take all the tax gains. So they'll buy insurance. And what has happened is because we've not had a massive correction in a very long time, the cost of that insurance has been very, very low. That's called volatility, and the price for volatility or the price of insurance has been ridiculously low. Now, in the infinite wisdom of Wall Street, in addition to just buying standard insurance, there have been these vehicles that have been designed, investment vehicles, to profit from the increase or decrease of volatility.
Okay.
Now, what has happened there is out of pure speculation, people have been running into these things, buying these things that are like markets on absolute steroids. So if the market goes up 10%, these things might be up 50. However, if the market goes down, they could not only go down more, but in certain events, they could go out of business.
Wow.
And one of them last night closed the day at 100, down from about 130, so already it was down, 30 points, and in the after hours started trading at 30, down 70%, went as low as 12. That's Credit Suisse issued that ETF. I don't know what will happen there. I don't know how it will play out. It's a big deal,
okay.
And that's scary.
Got two texts. One says, this is from Ed. Quint, why are people afraid to take a profit? Had a friend who was plus 20%. On a fund and refused to take 15% off the table in a tax-deferred account?
It's a loaded question. I have a lot of answers. I think it's uncharacteristic, and it's a fear of missing further upside without, again, having a plan. So I think you have to have a plan, not only where you would take profits, but where you would take losses. People just – that's just not in our nature to do that. We buy and hold forever, and that's just not –
just what we do.
That's just what we do, yeah. It's not appropriate, but that's why, in my opinion.
I love these young people that call. We get a lot of them on this program. Andrew says, I have about $500 to invest. For a first-time investor, what would you recommend? That's a great question.
It is a great question. I would recommend, I'm a big Vanguard fan. I just talked at the beginning hour of how dangerous the momentum is on the upside and the downside. But for someone just starting out in the contributory phase, there's no better and cheaper and more efficient way than buying the Vanguard S&P 500 fund. Go online, go to Vanguard.com. I do not get compensated, and I do not have any agreement with Vanguard at all.
Yeah.
Go online, open a Vanguard account.
Do it now or wait a little
bit? Look, depending on how old Andrew is, it makes no difference.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there's studies.
We're going to assume he's young.
Sure. There's studies that show if you bought at the absolute top before the 29 crash, you know, I mean, think about that. 29 crash, right? I mean, you're making money. Now, of course, you've got to still be alive. But,
right.
You know, the fact is that he should be trying to invest $500, you know, every quarter, every month. He should be buying, you know, as stocks continue down or up. So I like the most efficient way is the S&P 500 through Vanguard, in my opinion.
What has to happen? This is going to be probably a complicated question. We still have 9 minutes of the show. What has to happen before you're going to be comfortable buying?
Yeah, that's so in there's science and then there's art. And the science is that we're in the middle of earnings season right now. I'm watching these reports from these companies, and I want to continue to watch these reports. And so my number one question is that are we seeing this selling? Is there fundamental rationale behind this selling? So all of a sudden, has the economy just abruptly turned? That would be concerning to me, and we would start seeing it in company reports and economic reports. So that would keep me away. I also want to see, and this sounds crazy, I want to see more blood. I want to see more of a flush. Yesterday was scary, but I don't think most people sold. And so to see a bottom, and I mean a real bottom, we got to have people saying, get me out no matter what. And that is that's the more artistic side of it. Now, it might not happen. We might just, you know, reverse and go right up, you know, off to the races, and that's fine. But the artistic side is what I call the towel trade. Where people are just, you know, at all costs, get me out, and then we see a massive flush, and then we see a rebound. So, you know, again, there's a lot of nuances, and it is a loaded question. I don't mean entirely to bunt, but it's not just science, and there is an artistic form. I will tell you though that knowing where to look is half the battle, and I believe that we still are in this camp where we're going to start to see inflation coming at us very, very quickly. And so the areas that I'm most focused on going forward are areas that will do well as inflation continues to increase. So those are your materials, your industrials, basically companies that make stuff that if it drops on your foot, it hurts. So those are areas that we're looking at and watching closely. In addition, and this is ancillary to inflation, but I'm a believer here in the gold and silver position. So I think that allocating some of those areas into your portfolio is smart. And if you've been listening for longer than a cup of coffee, I'm not a gold bug. So I'm not this guy who says, you know, no matter what, let's just buy gold. That is not what I do. So this is the environment where, first and foremost, everything is on hold. I'm more concerned with the positions that we have and are we going to get stopped out? I mean, positions that I have that still have a ways to go, but, you know, they have levels from which I'm out no matter what. You know, give you a perfect example. We just bought Coca-Cola for a majority of our portfolios. And as much as I like Coca-Cola, I think they're a great company. They pay a 3% dividend. I think they have price elasticity. They have the ability to pass on higher costs to their, you know, to their customers. I think that's, you know, people are going to buy Coca-Cola. I mean, there's a variety of reasons. Fundamentally, the stock is attractive in the environment. It's attractive, et cetera. But if it breaks $43 a share for you know, longer than a second, I'm gone. I mean, I'll take the loss and move on. And I think that's critical in each of the positions to have a plan.
Here's a text that says, does all three companies raising wages to $15 an hour worry you for inflation, for gas and groceries?
It's happening. We're going to see it. We're seeing inflation. And again, I don't mean to, you know, bunt on this, but I send you to the blog where I wrote a very detailed piece about inflation. Basically, raw material prices have been going up for the last year and a half, 2 years. Copper, aluminum, steel, iron ore, et cetera. Those prices have been going up. Just look at the big hole downtown. This is a very rudimentary example, but that building is going to cost more than was earlier projected, which is going to increase rents. And to pay that rent, those companies are going to increase their prices of their products. And ultimately, the people who buy those products are going to demand higher wages. That is happening. That is inflationary. It's coming at us. And that's why I believe it's here to stay.
Mike, good morning.
Yeah, when you're talking about buying gold and silver. Now, the problem I've got is I guess I can't tell the difference between investing in a silver mine or a mining company and investing in the commodity itself. How do you distinguish the difference? Like, for the company USAS, is that investing in a silver mine or is that investing in silver as a commodity?
Okay, that's America's Silver Corporation. I believe that is a mining company. I don't typically buy miners, and I'll tell you why. Most of their balance sheets are garbage. Most of them are highly levered. They have extreme amounts of debt. It's typical in a company like that. They borrow a lot of money. You know, they have rights or royalty offerings to various mines, and they mine it, and then they sell it. That's their business model. In a rising interest rate environment, they have a pretty significant headwind because I think that they're going to be facing higher costs. So I don't like the miners, me personally. Now, if gold and silver continue to increase, they're going to move. They're going to be a good investment. But I think you have to know what the miner is and be very comfortable with their balance sheet. The quasi-mining company that we own is in copper. We own Freeport-McMoRan, FCX. I'm comfortable with their balance sheet. They're 90% copper, 10% gold. I'm comfortable with the company. I'm concerned about some international dealings that they have, but nonetheless, that's one of the only ones we own. But I like the metal for the inflation play.
Thank you, Mike. I sure appreciate you being here, and we're going to wear you out in the next few days, if that's okay.
Well, you know, that's perfectly fine. I think it's nice to be relevant again, for sure.
Thank you, Quint Tatro. And tell us how folks might get in touch with you.
The web is the best way, retirementky.com. That's retirementky.com.
Thank you so much for being with us.